You are listening to the Ivy Podcast. Learn from the thought leaders in areas of strategy, innovation, negotiation, and all things leadership. We interview the Ivy League, Fortune 100, and top startups. Now, here's your host, John Carcy-Baev.
Thanks again for having me, John. Really great to be here. My name is Paula Santamaria, and I am the Chief of Staff to the Global Head of Displays and Accessories at HP Inc.
Paula, thank you so much for finding time to join us on the Ivy Podcast today. Can you tell us a little bit more about your background? Where do you come from, and what has been your journey so far?
For sure. So long story short, I was born and raised in Bogota, Colombia, and moved to the United States when I was 10 years old. My dad was doing documentaries in the war zones in Colombia, so we were actually threatened out and had to seek asylum in the United States. I know it's coming up in the news, so people are more familiar with asylum now than ever before, but we were some of the few people that were granted and started this new journey in the United States. But because of my immigration journey, I dreamt of becoming a lawyer my whole life. I thought that I was going to be able to help other people that were seeking asylum and, you know, around human rights. I ended up going to the University of Houston and falling in love with public service. I was on the pre-law track, but I participated in an internship program called CHIP, which gave us opportunities to go and intern in local politics and with local nonprofits. And up until that point, I didn't really understand local government. I didn't know what they did for people or how it worked. And I wasn't familiar with it because it doesn't work at all in Colombia. But thankfully, when I joined, I was at the Houston City Hall and the Mayor Pro Tem's office. And since I joined, I was one of the people that answered the phone and listened to the constituents' concerns and issues and looked for solutions. And it was incredible to me that, you know, just that one phone call that our constituent had would allow us to help solve these huge issues that they were having. So I fell in love with public service. I was like, wow, we can really show up for people. We can really create a difference. And as I was toying with the idea of going to law school, a graduate school, one of my mentors at the University of Houston received a call from the Obama White House, because that summer they ran this program to get more young people across the country to join politics. So what they did is that they reached out to various schools and got recommendations from professors and different elected officials across the country, and invited about 75 of us to come and interview at the White House for a weekend. So never been to DC, jumped on a plane, went to go interview. And at that point, we had no idea who we were interviewing with. So you walk in and it was sort of like speed dating. They tell you, these are the people you're going to interview with. And we had 30 minutes to basically sell our profile to various agencies. And thankfully, I got lucky. I landed a job that weekend. 2 weeks later, graduated from college, moved to DC about 2 weeks after that, and spent about 3 years in DC as part of the Obama administration. I started at the National Endowment for the Arts, which was totally outside of my purview up until that point, but something special because both of my parents are artists. And I spent about a year there, worked on something called a Healing Arts Program, which was a partnership with the Department of Defense to help service members who will have traumatic brain injuries. And it was an incredible, incredible experience. And after that, as part of being an appointee, what they allow for you to do is to really explore different avenues of your interest. And at that point, I decided that I wanted to work closer to international development. So I ended up transitioning over to the Inter-American Development Bank. And that was also incredible because I was looking at loans and projects that were helping change infrastructure and countries in Latin America. And of course, being from Colombia, it was extremely relevant. And after the change of the administrations, what I did is that I wanted to join the tech industry. I was very passionate about the level of innovation that I was able to see and witness when I was still working in politics for the in the tech industry. And I transitioned over to HP Inc. in 2017.
Wow, what a journey. Tell us a little bit more about when you joined the Obama administration. At what point, what was the first time when you met President Obama at that time?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you are, as an appointee, you have a lot of opportunities to go to meetings at the White House, to join events. I mean, they this is, of course, pre-COVID, right? So you were able to go and have parties on the South Lawn and see the president, first lady, vice president, everyone speak. But after being there for about a year, I had this incredible opportunity because I was chosen as one of the top new five appointees that came in through the program that I mentioned. And I actually had a one-on-one with President Obama in the Oval Office,
wow,
which was the most insane experience of my life. I'm uh-huh. supposed, we're supposed to get married this weekend, but up until now, that has been the highlight of my life. And it was just incredible, right? Because, you know, you're in DC and you see these people, but to have that opportunity to be one-on-one with the most important person in the world and for him to give you your his undivided attention mm-hmm. was the most incredible experience. You know, I'm walking into the office and I'm like, there are so many things going on in the world. Like, what could possibly be in his mind, you know? But for the time that I was in there, mm-hmm. he was talking to me about me and thanking me for my service, which I just couldn't even wrap my mind around. I'm shaking the whole time. I think I'm going to pass out. But it was the most incredible experience.
Wow, that is so cool. What an experience. Man, kudos to you going through this and, you know, competing with so many people for that particular opportunity and then coming out on top. So that's, you know, it's a big, big accomplishment. I'm pretty sure you're very proud of that. That's amazing.
Thank you.
And then, so that's quite a change. You go from public sector and then you transition over to tech, to, you know, joining HP. Can you, so from your current role perspective as a chief of staff at HP, for those who are not very familiar with that particular role or what falls under the purview of chief of staff, tell us a little bit more about that experience, about those responsibilities.
Sure. And so, of course, coming from government, you always heard the term chief of staff. You know that that's supposed to be the right-hand person to whoever the principal is. And so when I first joined HP, I was working for a chief of staff in the engineering organization. And I realized that every chief of staff role, at least within HP and the people that I've met, they're very different, right? They it all depends on the organization and the principal that you're working for. But in my case, for example, I focus a lot on the people experience, right? So it's almost like a mini internal HR. And the other half is financials and operational processes, right? So I always tell the team that I'm here to try to make their lives easier. So I'll work on anything from, you know, we need a different site. We're working on moving things around, right? But it could also be the shift to working from home. Of course, we were all used to going into the office. I mean, it was incredible. It's this beautiful space where we come in and collaborate. And then almost overnight, we all had to work from home, right? And a lot of people had never had to work from home, especially the engineering teams. They're so used to being in the labs. They're so used to having the space, the different testing equipment that they need. And we had to have this shift, right? So as chief of staff, what I had to do is help with that transition, right? So it's first, like, really understand, what do our folks need? Do they have everything that they need at home? And this could be ranging from the displays that we have, which are what we call monitors, to their connectivity. Are they taking care of folks at home, right? So, like, really going in and trying to understand what people's experiences are and what their needs are, right? And trying to execute and make their lives better. So thankfully, we have an awesome team and people were super understanding, but that's one of the things that I focus on, right? I call myself a mini firefighter. And I think that these roles require a lot of patience. They require a lot of energy because things are coming at you from all sides. You have to be an expert multitasker because that's the number one thing, right? You could be like super laser focused on a project, you're working on this budget, but then next thing you know, the president needs something from your boss and you have to create this presentation or write talking points. And obviously I don't do it by myself, right? Like, we have a team of people that we work with, but I have to be that person that's like bouncing around and making sure that everything is taken care of.
Wow, that's really interesting. And sounds like, you know, like you said, the mini firefighter, that you're responsible one, you know, at one point for HR processes, and then you have to switch gears, almost put on your financial or even an accounting hat on.
Absolutely.
And so that's, you know, that's pretty exciting. And I'm pretty sure that keeps things very challenging and at the same time rewarding, because you get an opportunity to impact different teams, different employees, and different types of, you know, whatever that is your organization is working on. So yeah, that's very cool. From, you know, HP as an organization, I'm pretty sure there's a lot of emphasis on building and fostering that culture of innovation. And it's something it's a topic that, you know, that I'm very excited about. I host webinars, executive roundtables on that particular topic alone. So I like to spend some time with a lot of my guests on the podcast talking about this. So can you tell us a little bit more, of course, to the extent that you can share, that's kind of that innovation cycle almost that you guys go through as a team, or even individually, and then you come together as a group evaluating ideas, what to invest in and how to choose particular projects. Just curious, what does that look like in your current organization?
Yeah, well, HP is a big, big place, right? We have about 55,000 folks across the world. So I'm sure it varies by team. Mm-hmm. But I think that as a company, they do a really good job at creating internal spaces and forums to really inform everyone and get us thinking outside of what I like to call the HP box, right? So you have people designated looking at like the mega trends in the world, like what are we expecting 5-10 years down the line, not only in terms of the technology and innovation that we want to build, but also like, how is that going to impact the world? Like, what are we expecting, right? Like, our city's growing, are more people moving out to suburbs? And a lot of that, again, kind of goes back to this change with COVID, right? Like, for months, years, we keep talking about, you know, office of the future and how we're rethinking spaces and what we envision the new generation of workforce to look like. But now with COVID, I think it's disrupting a lot of that. So it's been interesting and really cool to watch HP pivot, right? And say, hey, you know, we were looking at this before, but what about this? And I think from a team and individual perspective, like we all find inspiration in various places, right? And within our specific group being displays and accessories, it encapsulates a ton of different product lines, right? So you have people that are working on gaming displays and gaming products, right? So they're very deep into understanding what is the gaming sector going to look like? How has that changed because of COVID? Is that how people are collaborating now, right? So I've learned a ton about gaming just being in this role, which is really cool. But also just thinking about how people are working, how people are learning, and looking at whatever is offered internally, doing brainstorming sessions as a team, like design thinking type of sessions. But also beyond that is like getting the right newsletters, right? I'm sure you've read and talked about The Hustle and things like that, where you're learning about these niche startups and trends. And so it's super interesting, but I'm sure I'm not alone in this. Most of us are always working, right? So I could be like, you know, running outside, listening to a podcast, and then it's like, oh, this is really interesting. This is a trend for the future. So I think we all do it in different ways, but I think overall as a company, there are a lot of spaces and opportunities to learn what they're seeing, what the internal experts are seeing as like future thinking products and innovations.
Right. Well, yeah, that's super cool. And, you know, just be in that position to learn, you know, different even areas within the organization. I'm pretty sure that's a unique opportunity to, like you said, right now you're learning a lot about not only displays and monitors, but also like the gaming industry in general. Mm-hmm. And going through that cycle of innovation almost, or experimentation, coming up with different ideas and things that may impact the industry in general. I think that's super impactful. That's super cool. So that's very exciting. So, really, you know, right now my team is actually shopping around for the monitors for all of our team members. So outside of this podcast,
I can give you all the recommendations.
I'll reach out to you for some ideas about that. You know, we spoke briefly about kind of personal productivity and being, you know, staying on top of things, not only from innovation standpoint, but with all of us shifting to a remote workforce. And, you know, that's a complete change for a lot of people. From your standpoint, what type of productivity hacks that you utilize on a daily basis that help you stay organized, help you stay, you know, on top of things, prioritize your tasks accordingly? What are the, you know, share with us some tactics that working for you, and maybe you use that to help your team members.
Yeah, so I am a list maker. I have to-do lists for just about everything in my life, and I feel like that's the easiest way for me to stay organized and try to like bucketize what I need to prioritize, right? And so kind of going back to what I was saying on being an quote unquote expert multitasker, I'll share kind of this personal and professional dichotomy, or so to speak, that I dealt with in the last year, right? So I was transitioning into this new role as chief of staff. We were planning our wedding. We were moving into a house. I was applying to business school, so there were a multitude of things happening at once, right? So if I didn't stay organized and try to really create a process for myself, then I was going to drop the ball in something. So for me, it's always key. I know this is a little old school, but I always have my little notepad, right? I write notes for just about everything and then create a to-do list for myself. I put everything on my calendar. I even put personal stuff on my calendar just because, like, if it's not on my calendar, I will likely forget about it. So for me, that's what I've been recommending for the entire team. I've been connecting with people and they're like, I'm really stressed. I can't seem to get my work done, even though I'm working more hours, right? Like this shift to virtual has completely blended our personal and professional lives, and it's really hard to like disconnect and find time for the things that you need to do, whether it's laundry or planning a wedding or et cetera, taking care of a loved one. So for me, it's been key to just block off my calendar. And that's what I tell people. I say, block off time during the day, block off time to go on a walk or meditate or whatever it is, or even just to answer emails. Like block off your calendar so that you can get yourself organized. And for most of the people that I've given that advice to, like it has helped. I know a lot of us try to keep things separate, personal and professional, but for me, if it's all in one place, that is the easiest way for me to stay organized.
No, I love that. I love that. And I myself, I live and breathe by the calendar as well, and the to-do list. One really cool thing that recently came about, because I spent a lot of time talking to a lot of executives, different companies, Fortune 500 to smaller startups, entrepreneurs, and I have multiple projects myself going on. And one time, a really good friend of mine, he mentioned this strategy, and it's nothing new. I've heard about that before, but he kind of created this acronym for himself. It's the acronym of OMA. OMA is basically one major accomplishment. And what he follows is essentially, yes, we all have to-do lists. We all have these great, list of things we have to task and categorize, cross off. But as we grow in a career, as we have our families, we have a lot of things going on, and it's very hard to stick to the entire all of the tasks that are on our to-do list. And I agreed with him. I said, listen, I would put this crazy list together, but at the end of the day, I'll go through and I'm like, I didn't get anything done. I got like maybe half of that. So he said exactly that's what was happening to him. And he said this OMA lets him to have a list and really focus on one major accomplishment. So for
I love
today,
that.
if I do that one thing, then it's a hell yeah moment. Yes, I feel productive, I feel accomplished, because everyone is, competing for our attention, whether that's personal, whether that's at work. Same with us. We're competing with others to get somebody else's attention on the calendar, especially now being remote. So I thought that
Absolutely.
was pretty cool. And I kind of just now followed that a little bit more rigorously in terms of having a full list of things to do, just writing that OMA, that one
I
major.
love that.
And if I do that, and I've been doing that, and I'm like, wow, this is actually really cool. So I just thought about
I'm gonna
sharing.
have to steal that. Yeah, I'm gonna start recommending that. I love that. Thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely. From to shift gears a little bit, as we've talked a little bit about innovation, we've talked a little bit about career progression and some of the things that help us stay productive. You're also, even when you were part of the Obama administration, I think now you're very active in the nonprofit sector. Tell us a little bit more about the motivation behind that, and what are the different projects that you're currently involved with? And if you can spend a couple of minutes talking about the mission of these types of projects, that would be pretty interesting to hear.
For sure. So I think my why is I genuinely like helping people. I know that helping people get to that next level or to get that job or apply to that school, like that brings me joy, right? So kind of going back and thinking of all the terrible things that are happening in the world all the time, it's like trying to figure out like what can I do to make it better for someone. So since being an immigrant, you know, my parents were not as familiar with the college application process, networking, internships, all of that. So I've relied heavily on mentors throughout my career and since I was in school, you know, and I feel that mentors and sponsors saw something in me when I was much younger that I didn't even see in myself, right? And they were able to help me pull that out. And that is the reason that I am here today. So I like to pay it forward and try to inspire the next generation as well. I've gotten very involved with local nonprofits, partly because it's very tied to politics, right? A lot of times if you're working in public service, public service more than politics, there's a lot of nonprofits that are in that space. So when I was when I transitioned back to Houston and I was trying to figure out what I was going to do and, you know, wanting to work in tech, I started meeting with a lot of people, networking, but also meeting a lot of students at some of these networking events that are like, you know, I want to be a doctor or a lawyer because that's what success looks like. And I was in those shoes back in the day. You know, when I came to the United States, I said, I want to be a lawyer because then that's the culmination of success. Like we came here for a reason. And I didn't know about different opportunities. Like I didn't even know what engineering was when I was in high school, you know? And so I think that maybe if I had known back then about the different opportunities and paths that you can take in life to be successful, who knows what I would have done, right? But I know for a lot of these students, especially low SES, low socioeconomic, but high performing students, there's a lot of them, right? And there are a lot of nonprofits here in Houston, like Emerge and Project Grad, that are specifically focused on helping first generation or low socioeconomic students get to that next level, right? So it's A, educating them into different opportunities and paths and giving them the toolkit of how to get to that next level, but then also helping teach them all the soft skills, right? Like how do you interview? What do you wear in an interview? Those were things that I also didn't know when I was in college, believe it or not. And so I've gotten very involved, you know, at a high level, I've helped coordinate and I can touch on that a little bit more, partnerships between HP and local nonprofits so that we as a company can have a bigger impact in the local community. So I also helped start, we co-founded the Hispanic Latino Business Impact Network, which is an ERG. So they used to have ERGs, Hispanic ERGs before HP separated 5 years ago. But after that, there wasn't one in Houston. So when I came and joined, I said, hey, I want to join the Latino group. And they're like, there isn't one, but you can help start it, which I did. And it's now one of the largest on campus. But half of the, or we call it a two-prong approach, was half of it, of the focus was around giving back to community and also giving people internally at HP that want to volunteer, that want to help also educate the next, you know, generation that's going to be in the workforce and beyond, give them an opportunity in the toolkit of how to become that mentor. So, you know, personally, I've been mentoring a ton of students like throughout the years, just like whether it's applying to school, getting jobs, now applying to business school. I've had a lot of people reach out thanks to Lulu Curiel, who I know was also on your podcast. Mm-hmm. But just inspiring people and giving them the toolkits in order to be successful. Because a lot of times, if someone doesn't take that time to explain things to you, you just know that the opportunities are out there, right? So it's helping pull those skills and teach those folks how to get there. And that's what makes me passionate. And you know, it's a huge part of my day-to-day job as well.
Well, that's so cool. I love that. I love those things. And me personally, myself involved in quite a few organizations like this, very similar. One of them is the first generation, kind of the Harvard Alumni Association that allows kind of these first gen students, because I'm not even a first gen. I came even before my parents to this country. So it's just also like you were saying, to be able to capitalize on that experience and pay it forward, yes, and to help some of the, you know, some of, whether that's a students or early stage career professionals with some of the things that we had gone through and we had learned. I think that's a beautiful thing. And, you know, it's great to hear that a lot more people, you know, at the end of the day, giving back instead of, yes, you know, just focusing on so much on, you know, whether that's the profit, whether that's commercialization or monetization of certain whatever products and services, and to be able to help the people that are going through the different, you know, stages that we had gone through. I think that's so cool. So thank you for sharing some of those examples. What were you involved with? from on Ivy Podcast, the way you had started out, I used to interview a lot of C-level executives, mostly in IT, and predominantly it's a male dominant kind of industry where not only information technology, but the higher you grow, the more it's, you know, the more, unfortunately, it's gender bias. And, you know, we've seen a lot of pretty good shifts lately, you know, from that standpoint, and good deal of topics and questions that we get from our listeners is around women in leadership or women in technology or women on, you know, different types of boards, whether that's profit or nonprofit. From your standpoint, you have a very diverse background. And if anything, if there was one advice that you could share now with your younger self when you were first starting out, what would that be? And if you could provide any examples of kind of why you think that's the case and why that would be productive or helpful, would love to hear that.
Yeah, I guess a couple of pieces of advice that I would give my younger self is surround yourself with the right people and don't be afraid to ask for help. You know, I've noticed specifically too, and I mean, this is across the board, right? But I see it a lot with Hispanic people is that we don't want to ask for help. We're like, we're thankful to be here. We're okay. We'll figure it out, right? Like there's a lot of that, like we got it, we'll figure it out. But we forget to ask for help. And so that's one thing that I've learned over the years is like, don't be afraid to ask the dumb questions. And I know that's super cliche, but, you know, kind of going back to what I was saying that I'm passionate about, you know, working in nonprofit and having mentees is because you need those people that you can go to with those quote unquote dumb questions. Like, I don't know what it means. I don't know, or this is not a dumb question, but another super important thing is like, how do I negotiate salary, right? Like, how do I compare to my peers? Like, am I making enough money? Like having those like discussions is super, super important. And I think that one of the key ways that you're going to be successful is it's meeting those mentors, right? Like integrating yourself with the right folks that are going to look out for you and help you get to that next level. I've been super thankful, you know, that in every space, whether I was in school with the Obama administration, back here in Houston, now at HP, it's like, I've been very lucky to find people to guide me through this journey. You know, I came from working in politics to working in a financial role in the software engineering group at HP. I have a poli sci background. I had a lot of questions, you know, but it just takes, you know, having that like go-to attitude and being honest, saying, I've never done that, but I want to learn. What do you recommend that I train on? What program was successful for you? What works on your team? It's like asking those questions so you're not duplicating work. You're not starting from scratch. You're not, you know, going in circles. Just ask for help and then surround yourself with the right people, but be genuine, you know, because that's another thing that I've seen. And I saw it, unfortunately, more when I was still in DC than here. But it's always meeting people and trying to figure out what you're getting from them. It's like a super toxic thing that I saw a lot, especially with like early career folks. You know, they go to these networking events and they try to figure out who's the most important person in the room and go introduce themselves to that one person because they think that's the key to success. And it's like, that's not genuine. That's not helpful for that person. That's not really helpful for you. Like, we all have to like level set our expectations and realize that most of the people we meet can teach us something valuable and we are not in the business of using people. But unfortunately, I saw a lot of that. And I always give that level of advice to the people I'm mentoring. It's like, make those genuine connections. Like don't use people. Don't think that, you know, by introducing or reaching out to X person, like that's the key. Like it's not. Right. So anyways, hopefully that's helpful advice for.
No, I think that's an outstanding advice. I love that. And, you know, I followed that myself at the end of the day, what you were talking about the latter part of your recommendation, really building genuine, you know, relationships with people. That's part of the mission. Part of the reason why I actually started this podcast is for me to be able to connect and build meaningful relationships with folks and surrounding myself with the people who are, you know, who are better than me, who are smarter than me, and for me to be able to learn from them. I think that's such a, you know, I always share that even with my own kids. it's something that, you know, to live by. And I love those recommendations that you share with us.
Yeah, Paula, I'll add one more thing actually before we move on, if that's okay. Making sure that you check your imposter syndrome. I've seen a lot of people, early career, a lot of women, a lot of people of color have that level of imposter syndrome. You won't apply to a job that you don't check all the boxes for. You won't take these risks. And the science is there. It'll tell you that a lot of people that don't experience imposter syndrome, they're going for those roles that are completely outside of their qualifications. Right. And a lot of times they're getting them, right? Mm-hmm. So I always recommend for people, it's like, check that imposter syndrome. Have people in your circle that can let you know when you are experiencing it and also help you get through it, right? So I mean, even just last week, I was talking to a colleague and she calls me, she's like, hey, I'm applying for this job. I'm really nervous. I don't think it's for me. And I said, you're just experiencing imposter syndrome. Like, and I, you know, rattled off all these accomplishments that I know she's accomplished over the past couple of years. And I said, you've built this. You've done this. Not a lot of people can do that. So remind yourself of that when you're going into that interview, because, you know, everything you've done so far has been extremely valuable, et cetera, right? So you have people in your corner that are going to be there for you and tell you those things. Hey, you're experiencing imposter syndrome. Push past it. Okay, you're applying for this role. You can do 5 out of the 10 things really well. Be honest with yourself, but also go for it. Why not? The worst thing they can say is no. They might just say yes. They might like the fact that, you know, you have 5 of the skills, but for the next 5, you're going to be able to create something new and develop new skills and help the team and innovate, right? So a lot of things that we consider are negative are actually positive. And I know even in the chief of staff role that I got, I was very honest with my boss from the beginning. It's like, I've never overseen a P&L, and especially as large as ours. She said, okay, that's a learning opportunity. Mm-hmm. Instead of her being like, oh, you don't have this, bye. No, mm-hmm. She's like, I'm here to coach you, to help you learn how to run a business. And mm-hmm. those are the types of people that you want to work for.
That's so cool. I love that recommendation. And, you know, us being in IT staffing space, I deal with that all the time. When I get a client that's looking for X and I get another candidate that's more of a Y and they don't necessarily match up, but there is an opportunity. There is some type of, you know, there are some points of connection, and those self-imposed limitations are very dangerous space to be in.
Agreed.
And like you said, you never know until that conversation actually does happen. Between whether that's candidate and the hiring manager or whatever else the situation you may be in, it's, you know, that imposter syndrome, those self-inflicted limitations, you know, it can be very dangerous, very dangerous. So I love that additional recommendation. Thank you for thinking of that. Paula, last but not least, what are you currently reading? And what is one book that you always recommend to others, and why is that?
It's hard to choose just one. I don't know if this is happening to other people during the quarantine, but I've started a lot of different books.
Yes.
Yes. A lot of different ones, you know, and
all over everybody.
It's so, I mean, if I show you my like coffee table, there are 3 books that I've started, right? But one that I recently finished is called Untamed by Glennon Doyle. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's great. It's like a feel good book. But it also really helps like check those biases and imposter syndrome that like you have internally and like overcoming them. So it's not necessarily like self-help or anything like that, but it's just a nice book to read during this time. Some of my favorite authors though, Junot Diaz, if you've heard of him, he is right. A Dominican author from the Bronx. And I always recommend all of his books to everyone. Mm-hmm. But one of my favorites is by Gabriel Garcia Marquez, who is a Colombian author, and it's 100 Years of Solitude. It is this beautiful book about magical realism in Colombia, and it's just an incredible read. So if you guys haven't checked it out, it's one of those books that you literally escape to a new reality. So definitely recommend it for a lot of folks.
That's cool. You know, we'll make the titles of these books available in episode notes for our listeners. So thank you so much for sharing that. And in general, Paula, it was a short conversation, but I really enjoyed it. I learned quite a bit. So thank you for taking the time to share with us. Look forward to staying in touch with you, and perhaps we could do another episode and, you know, in a period of time to see how much I've changed, how much I've transpired. So really, really appreciate it.
That would be awesome. Thank you so much for having me, John. Really, really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.